Welcome to the Stonebridge Church Podcast. Watch us live every Sunday morning at 9:30 or 11:05 a.m. at gosblive.com. Or visit us in person. You can find directions at gostonebridge.com. Connect with us on our social media at facebook.com/gostonebridge and our Instagram at sbchurch.
All right, so if this is your first week, we've been doing a series. We're calling it Journey to Forgiveness, but it's about the life of Joseph in the Old Testament, and it really is a journey that Joseph takes, and you see so many things that happen in Joseph's lives, and you see so many things about Joseph, how he sees life, how he understands life, that just come out in the story, which are pretty remarkable. And I think it's important because I think you and I go through the same thing. We're on a journey where we're trying to figure out things about life. Hopefully you're trying to figure out some things about God himself and how God reveals himself, how he points himself to us. And Joseph, 4,200 years ago, Joseph is the great-grandson of Abraham. So if you've ever heard of Abraham before, Abraham's one of these guys that starts a whole new family. God promises he'll be a whole new nation. There's one son in the picture of Abraham that is a part of that. His name is Isaac. There is another son named Ishmael. He's actually brought up in this same story of Joseph, but Isaac is the son, and there's only one son of Isaac that pops up in the story, and that's Jacob. So you might think, boy, this is not a really good start on building a nation or building a giant family. But all of a sudden with Jacob, you have these 12 sons, and Joseph is one of these sons. And we sort of looked at Joseph's story as a teenager. He has a dream, and we all have dreams as teenagers. And his brothers are jealous of his position, how he's treated by his father, by his dreams. And so they sell him to a group of Ishmaelites who are traveling on their way to Egypt. And those Ishmaelites take him down. They sell him to a guy named, does anybody remember the guy's name? He was the captain of the guard of the Pharaoh of Egypt. His name was Potiphar. Thank you, Potiphar. And so he's in Potiphar's household. And then there's this amazing thing that comes up in that chapter where it talks about him in that household. In fact, we called it several weeks ago, Joseph's The Secret of My Success. And that is that Yahweh was with him. Now, again, just to let you know, this word for Yahweh there is not a word that Joseph would have known. This is a word that Moses would have known later, and Moses is the one who writes this. And so Moses is projecting onto the story that it's not just God, because the word for God that they would use would be the word Elohim. And it comes from a Canaanite and an Akkadian word, and it was plural. It meant the gods. And so the Egyptians would have used and understood this word for the gods, and Joseph uses the word also. But in this case, Moses is pointing out, but the personal God, the Yahweh, the I Am, the great I Am, who is revealed more to Moses, is with Joseph. And I think that this is so important to just hang on to in Joseph's story, because Joseph learns to live his life believing, understanding, putting his faith in, living his life, his actions, based on this idea that Yahweh was with him. Even though he did not know the name Yahweh, he understood that there was God who was personal, who was watching after him. I say that because, we learn a lot of things about God. A lot of people talk about God. The Egyptians talked about God or the gods, because most of us understand or have this idea that there's got to be someone greater than us and bigger than us. But also the tendency of human beings is to create their own image of God, right? And to say, well, this is the God that I believe in. Have you ever had somebody come up to you? I've had them in and they'll say, they'll describe God as they don't like this description of God. And they'll say, I don't believe in a God like that. And I'll go a lot of times, well, neither do I, because it's not the God who has revealed himself in the Bible, what you just described. And so we tend to create images or ideas of God rather than, in Joseph's case, Joseph understanding that there was a God who was revealing his own character to Joseph and watching after Joseph. And that's where his hope was. That's where his trust is. We would say that's where our faith is. And, even though we don't see God, we see God
working and moving in our lives, and we understand how much he cares for us. And that's how Joseph lived his life. And you say, well, wait a minute, I don't understand. How do you get that? See, this is why the Bible is such an important book, because you see how Joseph gets this, how he understands this by the way he acts, by the things that he does, not because he can give you, you know, Yahweh's name, which later is revealed, or things that you and I know from the New Testament about God, as Jesus reveals God even further to us. But you see the same character of God that is active in Joseph's actions, the things that he does. Does that make sense? I hope so, because that's the key. If I'm not acting or living my life as if there is a God who's watching after me and caring for me, then it says something about whether or not I really believe there's a God who's watching after me and caring for me. And so Joseph is there in Egypt. He's working for Potiphar. It says that everything he did prospered. Joseph became an incredible manager of Potiphar's first household. He prospered. And then Potiphar's wife decided, yeah, but I want him, and she had the ability, the authority, the power to do that, but Joseph would not cooperate with her. Why? Because of who Yahweh was. And he actually says this, how could I do this? How could I betray Potiphar? Because Potiphar has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. So how could I do this? And he adds this, and sin against God. Now he uses here again, this is Joseph's words, sin against Elohim, but he uses it in the singular. Sin against Elohim, God, the God that he understood and the God that he knew. And so by his character, Joseph is acting something out, which tells you better than anything, better than what someone says, what he believes, where he's put his hope, who he trusts in. I know that it's very popular for people to say this. They'll say, well, I understand Joseph did what was right, but I have to do in my life what I believe is right for me. You hear that a lot of times? Now, there's one thing if you say, you know, so what's right for me is to wear this shirt, you know, because I like this color a little bit better, where you may have worn, you know, a yellow shirt today or something like that. But that's not what he's talking about. Joseph is doing what he believes is right in the eyes of Yahweh, because Yahweh watches after his life. And so when I say I've got to do what is right for me, a lot of people mean I've got to do what is right in my eyes, what is best for me in my life, which means what God are you trusting in? Different God, right? Because you've decided that your rights or your ideas or your desires are the most important desires, and so I've got to do what is right in my eyes. And this is what it says. Listen, this is what it says. I do not believe that there is Yahweh watching after my life. That's what it says. I'm not saying that we don't all make mistakes, that we all sin, that we all don't do that at times, but that's what it's actually saying. And Joseph is saying, I can't do that because Yahweh has been watching after me, which you might reply. I would have replied, wait a minute. If Yahweh is watching after you, why aren't you still in the land of Canaan and in the household of your father? Why did your brothers betray you and sell you to some Ishmaelite traders? Why are you now a slave in the land of Egypt? But Joseph says, nope, I still believe that Yahweh is watching after my life as best he can, best as he understands. Ends up, he gets thrown into prison. It wasn't just any prison. Joseph is thrown into Pharaoh's prison. It's the palace prison where Potiphar would actually have been over and in charge of this. Potiphar can still keep his eyes on Joseph. And there, once again, you see this phrase pop up again. It's the only two times that this phrase pops up in Genesis. It says, once again, and Yahweh was with him in the prison. And Joseph, once again, prospered. And this says that Joseph's understanding of his life was that God was watching after him. And no matter what the circumstances looked like, no matter what he went through in life, it did not change the fact that God, that Yahweh, personally was watching after Joseph's life, and he would continue to live his life in this way, and he prospered. In fact, it says the guy that was over the prison that ran in just trusted everything to him, and at some point, two political prisoners are thrown into a prison. One is the cupbearer of Pharaoh, and the other is the baker of Pharaoh. And they're in this very special prison, high-ranking prison, and they have dreams. And you think, you know, it might have reminded Joseph that he had dreams, but they had dreams and they didn't know what they meant. And Joseph says, you know, I'll tell you, God is the only one that can interpret dreams. I'll tell you what they mean. And so he tells them, and he's absolutely right. The cupbearer is put back in his position in Pharaoh's court, and the baker is hanged by the Pharaoh at the same time. So those dreams actually come true. But Joseph does this when he does it. He tells the cupbearer, and remember me, right? Because I was not treated right. I was sold by my brothers. I'm in a land that this is not my land. I'm a slave. I shouldn't be a slave in this land. Remember me. But does the cupbearer remember Joseph when he's put back in his position? Anybody? No, he does not. He forgets all about Joseph. And that's where we pick up the story. And this is really, a lot of writers in the Bible, they will say this is the pivotal chapter in Joseph's story. They will actually say this is the pivotal chapter in all of Genesis. Some will say this is the pivotal chapter in all the Old Testament. And some will go even further than that and say in all the Bible. I'm not making any statement one way or the other except to tell you, yeah, it is a pivotal chapter. But if you miss what is so important about it and the pivot that occurs, you might miss once again what is so important about Joseph's life. So here's what it says. Verse number one. I know I'm talking fast. I had coffee. Here's what it says. This is verse number one. It says, 2 full years later. Joseph was 17 when he was sold into slavery. He's 30 years old now. So this has gone over a 13-year period in his life. And 2 full years later, after the cupbearer is put back into his position, so it's been a long time that he's forgotten about him, Pharaoh dreamed. Oh, man. See, Pharaoh has dreams also. And I know you might think, I would think, you know, Pharaoh is the most powerful man in the land. He's probably the most powerful man in the world, at least the known world that they would have known about. Pharaoh is not only treated as a powerful ruler, a king, Pharaoh is treated as a god. In fact, I found this picture, another one of those pictures. This is, Joseph is in Pharaoh's world now, Pharaoh's land, and he rules over it. And Pharaoh can do anything he wants to do. Anything he says that needs to be done, it will be done. But Pharaoh understands this about life. Don't you understand this? He has enemies. There are people who would like his, what? Position, yeah. There are other nations or other groups of people that would like to own and take his nation. So, you know, this happens to us a lot. We just think if I only would rise up to this position, if I could only get here, man, life would be so good. It would be so easy. I will have arrived. It is the most pivotal moment. You know, nothing bad could ever happen. Nothing could ever bother me. You ever felt like that? In fact, you know, if you're a parent here, don't you remember when you were a kid and you thought just one day, if I were the parent, oh, yes, you know, because I can do whatever I want, and it's my will and my way. You know, now I'm a kid, and I have to do it with my parent. And you become a parent, and is it easier? No, it's not easier. It's worse, because there's so many other things that can go wrong. There's so many people depending on you. There are so many people, yeah, that pull for you, but it's also those who are not pulling for you at all. This is Pharaoh's position. Pharaoh's in a difficult position, and what Pharaoh wants to know more than anything else is what will happen in the future, because he's not just living his life for right now. I know we think that sometimes. He's living his life for the future. And so Pharaoh had a dream, and they believe that in those dreams that the gods, somehow the universe, somehow the stars, somehow something up there was projecting something about the future in their lives. You might feel the same way, but this is how Pharaoh felt. And so it says that he had a dream that he was standing on the bank of the Nile River. The Nile River is the source of life for the Egyptians. In fact, the Nile River was the source of the afterlife for them, where it came from, where it went to. And it says that this dream that he had just really perplexed him, and it bothered him. And it goes to the dream, and then you jump down in verse number 8, and it says, the next morning, Pharaoh was very disturbed by the dreams. So he called, catch this, he called all of the magicians and the wise men of Egypt. When Pharaoh told them his dream, no one could tell him what the dream meant. So in Egypt, Pharaoh had groups of people, and they went to school. They were trained in how to interpret dreams. Their job was to instruct the king, the Pharaoh, in the future. Their job was to watch after him. In fact, that was their whole job, and they had these incredible positions of authority and purpose, all because they were trained and they were educated in how to do this. And so he does what he always would do. He calls them in. They're like counselors. They are seers into the future. And he says, here's my dream. What does this mean? And it says that none of them could tell him what it means. You know, part of it is, don't you think, none of them dared tell him? Because, you know, one of the problems is if you're in that position, you tell the king something he doesn't like, guess whose head might be hanging from the noose next? Yeah, it might be yours because he's used to, don't we do the same thing though, hold on? He's used to wanting people to tell him what he wants to hear, not what he doesn't want to hear, right? Even in Egypt, when you look at all the hieroglyphs and all the stories there, rarely do you find anything bad happening to the Pharaoh, to the king, because that's not the history that they carved out on walls and they wrote, because that's not how they wanted their future to be, just like us. They tended to look away from that or want to wipe that part out. Pharaoh's exactly in the same spot. And so whether or not, you know, they wanted to or didn't want to, none of them could tell him their dream. And it says this, here we go, finally, that guy that forgot. Finally, verse number 9, the king's chief cupbearer spoke up. He says, today I have been reminded of my failure, he told Pharaoh. You know, for a long time, I always thought that this verse is referring to he's reminded of when he offended the Pharaoh and got thrown into prison, meaning, you know, my sin or my failure, you know, that I offended you. But I as I read it and as I've looked more, I think that what he's talking about, I'm reminded of my failure that there was this guy in prison 2 years ago that I told him I would remember him and I would tell, you know, the Pharaoh or someone about him. And here I am 2 years later, and I've been living my life because life was really good the last 2 years when it looked like it could be really bad. And so I'm just riding on that part of it, and I've sort of blocked out and forgotten all about this guy that was there. And today when you ask this, I'm reminded of that failure. He said, some time ago, you were angry with the chief baker and me, and you imprisoned us in a place of the captain of the guard. One night, the chief baker and I each had dreams, and each dream had its own meaning. There was a young Hebrew man with us in the prison who was a slave of the captain of the guard. We told him our dreams, and he told us what each of our dreams meant. And everything, catch this, everything happened just as he predicted, just as he said it was going to happen. I was restored to my position as cupbearer, and the chief baker was executed and impaled on a pole. Pharaoh sent for Joseph at once, and he was quickly brought from the prison. After he shaved and changed his clothes, I think this has something to do with, you know, I was listening to, I don't know if you've ever listened to a guy named J. Vernon McGee. He was a preacher of another generation, probably died about 30, 40 years ago, something like that. And I was listening to Vernon McGee, and just it's fun. He was born in Texas, lived in the South, kind of has a nice Southern accent. But one of the things he was talking about, and Joseph was in the prison, and they all lived like hippies. And I was like, okay, so, you know. And no, it's fine. In his day, that's probably, you know, this recording is probably in the 60s or 70s. That's probably how he saw it and how he understood it. And I laugh because probably nothing is further from the truth. But he does have to shave and clean up. And it would mean that he shaved more than just his beard. He shaved everything. And he cleans up to come before the Pharaoh because this is really important. And from this day on, there's something very different about Joseph. I mean, really different about Joseph. He walks like an Egyptian, right? From now on, you know, he is really in the system. He's about to really be put in the system. Because when you come before Pharaoh, you come before Pharaoh who also views himself as a god in the way that Pharaoh wants you to come before him. And so Joseph has to do this. He has no choice to do this. So he comes before him. And it says in the next verse, he changed his clothes. He went in and he stood before Pharaoh. Then Pharaoh said to him, I had a dream last night, and no one here can tell me what it means. But I've heard that when you hear about a dream, you can interpret it. So here's again, this is evidence of Joseph, because this is not, if you're looking out after yourself, this is not how you respond. He says, it is beyond my power to do this. You don't say that. If you're Joseph, if you're a normal person, you say, this is it. This is my chance. Oh, yes, I can do it. You know, I'm your man, right? Thump your chest. Here's my resume. Man, you have picked the right person. But Joseph has not learned to live his life trusting in that, even though he's skilled. He's really good at what he does. But you see something again deep down about where Joseph has placed his trust and what he believes, just revealed in his actions and his character. It's beyond me. I can't do this. Don't you know it's in a way, the smartest thing you and I can do is be honest. It is. It may not be the best for your promotion. It may not be the best for what, we all self-promote anyway, about for what you project to other people about who you are, because we tend to project, you know, more than who we are to other people because we want them to think really highly of us and think good thoughts about us. But don't you think about it? Don't you think that being honest, being straightforward would be the best thing in the long run? Because then you don't have to cover things or make excuses for things and say, well, this way. I told you last week I make my kids watch Judge Judy with me. One of the things I love about Judge Judy is whenever she asks a question and you can see the person go, she says, no, don't think, just answer. She says, the more you think, you know, it just becomes more complicated. If you just answer truthfully, you don't have to have a good memory. You don't have to remember and try, oh, but I said this, you know. So just be honest. Just be straightforward. And Joseph, this is exactly what he's doing from his perspective of there being a God in the world, about this God watching after him, about the predictions that he made about those other dreams, that those came from God, who's the only one who knows. They didn't come from Joseph. It is beyond my power to do this, but God can tell you what it means. And then he says, and set you at ease, because that's Pharaoh's problem. I'm disturbed by all of this. What is going to happen? I've got this bad feeling when I look at my dreams or I reflect back on my dreams about what is coming. And he said, yeah, because you just need an answer about what these things mean. And it says in verse number 28, here he goes. This will happen just as I have described. This is Joseph speaking to the Pharaoh. For God has revealed to Pharaoh in advance what he is about to do. The next 7 years will be a great period of prosperity throughout the land of Egypt. And afterward, there will be 7 years of famine, so great that all the prosperity will be forgotten in Egypt. Let me say that again. So great the famine that all the prosperity will be forgotten in the land of Egypt. Famine will destroy the land. This famine will be so severe that even the memory of the good years will be erased. As for having two similar dreams, it means that these events have been decreed by God and he will soon make them happen. Joseph, once again, through all this, he is put in a different position because Joseph says what you need to do is you need to prepare through the years of good, when everything is really good. In fact, Joseph even tells him how to prepare. You need to go and organize Egypt differently. You need to organize it in sections. You need people watching after that. You need to store the grain away in the good times. You need to tax the people 20%. And it won't be a burden because they'll be making so much money and so much grain that you can take the 20%, you can store it away, and when you store it away, you will have these resources for the 7 lean years that are coming. I don't know if you know this, but I love history, so I've watched a lot of the stuff on Egyptology and about the land of Egypt, and one of the things they're pretty amazed by is Egypt's ability at some point in their history to build outposts where they would keep their horses and their chariots and their grain storage. They said enormous grain storage. In fact, they would talk about it. It doesn't even make sense. Why would you build so much storage for grain? Enough grain, they were talking about in one outpost, you know, there's a certain number of horses and chariots, but they've got enough grain stored there for 100 times as many horses and soldiers in this outpost for the next 20 years. They've got enough because there's this huge, we would call them silos, but they just built big giant rooms, put the grain a lot of times in jars so they could transport it, and they just stored the grain away. Now, I'm not telling you this was during Joseph's time because I don't really know, but that's exactly what Joseph tells Pharaoh you need to do. You just need to be smart during this time. And what will happen is at the end of those years, he says, you get to have the opportunity to go back and sell the grain back to your people because you now have taken it and stored it away, and you will own everything. In fact, people from other lands will come, and you will own everything, and you just need to make sure that you find somebody who can oversee this, who can make this happen. And so Pharaoh does this. He says, where could I find someone like this? Where could I find someone with the foresight and the understanding and the discipline to do this? And I think this is so important about Joseph, because when he's looking at Joseph's life, he's not looking at Joseph the same way he looked at all of his magicians and soothsayers and all his officials. He doesn't look at them the same way. He sees this guy as someone who has insight and integrity about his life, and he will do something that no one else does. And he does this really strange thing. He takes a Hebrew slave and he makes him the second in command in Egypt. He dresses him different, yes. He not only walked like an Egyptian, he looked like an Egyptian, right? He knew the language, he knew the skills, he knew everything about the Egyptian culture. And he wears the signet ring of Pharaoh. That means wherever he goes, he is able to take wax and that ring and imprint it, and everyone must do what he says, obey what he says, as if Pharaoh himself has said it, because he's given this power to Joseph himself. Kind of a pattern for Joseph's life, isn't it? But not because Joseph looked out after himself, but because Joseph saw life as God is looking out after me. He is watching out after me. He has put me in this position. Now, I say this because here's what's so key about this. It would be interesting to say, I would understand if you said this, Joseph has arrived. It is a pivotal moment. He's finally, hit the top. This is it. Everything was pointed to this. Now, he has nothing to worry about. Now he's like Pharaoh. Did Pharaoh have anything to worry about? A lot to worry about. But now he'd be like Pharaoh. And it's easy to think that's the answer to Joseph's life. And this is the fulfillment of the dreams in Joseph's life. This is not the fulfillment of the dreams in Joseph's life. And Joseph understands this because he is still looking to Yahweh, who watches after his life. And he's still living his life based on what is important to Yahweh and what Yahweh is doing, not what Joseph wants or how Joseph sees it. That is a pivot in life. It's a pivot for me and you if we decide to do that. It was a pivot, 2,000 years later when Jesus comes along and these disciples who followed him and they listened to his teaching, and it says that they believed, but even at the very end it still says, and they struggle with believing until Jesus was raised from the dead. And then they look at Jesus and they realize it's more than just having the good things in this world and in this life. There's more to it. And so all those things that they thought this would be what it is to arrive and to have finally gotten there, all of those things all of a sudden get put to a different level than they did before, all because of how we see God, what he is like, what his character is like. And in that way, God comes alive inside of us. God changes us. We don't live the same way that we lived before. And even though Joseph does all of this work, it's still this Joseph. Yes, powerful. Yes, he can do whatever he wants to. Yes, if he said it was going to be done. But there was something still very different, right? Very different about Joseph's life. So they go through all those good years. Everything's getting stacked up. People are happy. They're making money. They're making grain hand over fist. The land is yielding like it has never yielded before. Pharaoh actually gives Joseph a wife, a very special wife. He chooses himself. Pharaoh changes Joseph's name to an Egyptian name. We don't know exactly what it meant, but it had something to do with the Egyptians' gods, and that this was life because the Egyptian gods had granted to Joseph life. And all these things going in Joseph's life, and Joseph still, even though he has to take those things, he goes, Joseph still doesn't buy it. Joseph doesn't, he may look Egyptian, he may talk Egyptian, he may walk Egyptian, but guess what still lives in his heart? Yahweh still lives in his heart. That's who he's going to follow. He still doesn't change who he is, even after all of these accomplishments. You know, I think most of us would say, I can go through some hardships, I can go through some difficulties, and I can hang on. But the real question is, you know, could we go through if everything went our way? Could we go through the, you know, the success and the prosperity and the position and not change? Because how many times have we seen people, they're totally different once all of a sudden everything goes their way, or they hit success, or they hit some type of prosperity? You know, the other reason, you might want to write this down, the other reason I can tell you for sure this was not the fulfillment of the dream is because the dream that was given all the way back to Abraham, and Joseph is included, it has nothing to do with Egypt. It has to do with their family, and it has to do with what God would do through this new group of people that would be called Israel. And all, none of these things are being fulfilled right now in Joseph's life. He's not even united once again to his family. So the dream is not being fulfilled here. It's just God is still moving Joseph through, yes, what will be a test or a trial in his life. So if you jump all the way down to verse 50, this is what it says. During this time, before the first of the famine years, two sons were born to Joseph. This is important. And his wife, Aseneth, the daughter of Potipharah, the priest of On. Joseph named his older son Manasseh, and he said, God has made me forget all my troubles and everyone in my family. Don't misunderstand. He's not saying I have forgotten my family. He just means all of the things that they did to me, all the things that were done against me, he has let go of those things. He's not carrying in his life bitterness and vengeful thoughts, and I can't wait to get back, and if one day I could strike against them, you know why? Because Joseph has focused his life on Yahweh, not on his family. And then it goes on to say in the next verse that I'm trying to find because I'm lost. Oh, here we go. In the next verse, verse 52, Joseph named his second son, say this one with me, he is named what? Ephraim. And Ephraim, Manasseh and Ephraim will be the 12th tribe. There's not a tribe known in a land known as Joseph. They will name it after the half-tribes of Manasseh and Ephraim. For he said, God has made me, listen to this, fruitful in the land of my grief. Who has made me fruitful? Now he would say Elohim. That's all he knew. But he is talking about Yahweh. Yahweh has made me fruitful in the land of my grief. 53, it says, at last, the 7 years of bumper crops throughout the land of Egypt came to an end. Then the 7 years of famine began, just as Joseph had predicted. The famine also struck all the surrounding countries. And throughout Egypt, there was plenty of food. Eventually, however, the famine spread throughout the land of Egypt as well. And when the people cried out to the Pharaoh for food, he told them, don't you love this? He told them what? Go to... This is the guy you still trust. And especially now that the good years have ended and the famine has come, it's exactly as he said. I put him in charge. That was a really smart thing for me to do because all the things that needed to be done, he has done. Why? I don't know. I wouldn't have done it. No one else said, you know, when everything is good and you're making money hand over, you know, fist, you would think, man, you just put away a lot of money. But most people do the opposite. They borrow a lot more and spend a lot more, right? They just say, it will never end. Boy, things are so good. And then it ends. And then it ends. And it doesn't shake Joseph because Joseph has decided how he's going to live his life, who he's going to live his life to please. And so he is still following Yahweh with his life. Go to Joseph and do whatever he tells you. So with severe famine everywhere, Joseph opened up the storehouses and distributed grain to the Egyptians, for the famine was severe throughout the land of Egypt. And people from all around Egypt, they came to buy grain from Joseph because the famine was so severe throughout the what? The world. This was bigger than just Egypt. And this is why I say, in one sense, this last verse in the chapter is the pivotal chapter. I mean, is the pivotal verse. This is the pivotal moment because all of a sudden everything has turned out the way Joseph said it was going to turn out because God said this is the way it was going to turn out. And Joseph has acted upon that because that's where he put his hope and his trust. And now Joseph is prepared and Joseph is in a position to be able to influence those around him and the future that is to come. Four things real quickly. I'm just throw these out there that through this. Joseph learns what to forget, and Joseph learns what not to forget. It would have been very easy for Joseph to have forgotten God through this. Man, life's good. Got everything I want. Man, just look at who I am, my position, what I can do. It would have been very easy to have forgotten the God that you cannot see, but Joseph did not. Joseph remembered who God was. He would not forget who God was. He's still acting based on who God is, the character of God, not based on what he might think is his own good. He's still acting in that way. It's still working out really well. And he has learned what to forget. He's let go of the bitterness. He's let go of the frustration. He's let go of the hurt that was done against him because he knew that's not the future. That has nothing to do with Yahweh because look at how Yahweh has watched after my life. And for the rest of his life, he's got two sons to remind him of that. God has delivered me from that pain. He's delivered me from that frustration in life. And God has blessed me in the land of my grief where I felt it. God has been with me. Second thing is the power of Joseph's position is built on Joseph's character. God has built a character into Joseph's life based on the character of God. And that's why I put the third one in there for Joseph. Character comes before confidence. We tend to think, you know, confidence comes first. And we just need to build our confidence and our self-esteem and what we think of ourselves. Joseph's life says the opposite is true. That God builds character, his character, into our life. We're still sinners. Listen, we still fail. But God is in the process of trying to build his character based on a trust in him into my life and into your life because character is what counts. And if you have character, then your confidence is in a good place. That's Joseph. You know, Pharaoh puts a lot of confidence in Joseph. Is it well placed? Pharaoh would say, yeah, it was really well placed. We're in an incredible position. In fact, by the end of these 7 years of famine, guess who owns everything? Pharaoh. Because Joseph has gone and bought everything back with the grain that everyone owns and handed it to Pharaoh. So Pharaoh's like, yeah, I put my confidence in him. It was a good thing because of his character, because of who Joseph was and because of what Joseph is able to accomplish. And then the fourth thing is that his character is absolutely, Joseph would say his character is built on this faithfulness of God, that God would watch after him. And that's just where he's built it. So he's 37 years old now. The good years have ended. The famine has come. And Joseph is still looking to God. And it is a pivotal chapter because it's going to pivot into some things for Joseph to know and for Joseph to learn, and not only for him, but for his family, key things about who his family is and the future of his family. And because of that, listen, for us 4,000 years later, who are still part of that line, still part of what has happened, all because of the faithfulness of Yahweh. Let's pray together. Lord, you are faithful, and you do prove yourself to be faithful, even when we get confused, even when we think it would be better to do things our way rather than to do things your way. And Lord, we all admit that that's easy for us to do because we tend to see it a certain way by just what's in front of us. And so many times we miss the God who has come to reveal himself to us and wants to live inside of us. If you're here and you've never put your hope and your trust in Jesus Christ, Jesus is the fullest revelation of Yahweh. He's Yahweh with flesh and blood on. So not only we would know what he's like, we would know just how much he wants to know us, to walk with us, to live with us, that he does have plans, future plans for us, and that those plans are so much better than our short-term, our immediate plans. Never put your hope and your trust in Jesus Christ. Listen, God still offers that relationship based on his character, on who he has always been, who he will be in the future. You can open up your heart, say, Lord, come live in me. Thank you for sending your son, forgiving me of my sins, cleansing me, offering himself so that I could be made right with you. Thank you that Jesus didn't just show up and then leave, but he stayed. He left us his spirit to live inside of us, a new way of looking at life, understanding it, a new empowerment inside of us, not like the old idea of empowerment that we had, totally different, based on something that lasts, that is your character, who you are. So, Father, come live in us. In Jesus' name we pray.